Hi everyone, welcome back to the Inspire Health Podcast, and we're going to continue on with part two of our episode on fats that heal, fats that kill with renowned nutrition expert Udo Erasmus. Today we continue on as we explore dietary fats. Udo is going to debunk myths around fish oil and plant oils, and he reveals which fats support health and which may contribute to disease. So stay tuned, and this episode is packed with lots of great information.
Okay, so fundamentally the ability to convert, and by the way, horses and cows that only eat grass, they're able to convert the omega-3s in grass into the DHA in the brain. Hello? Right? Okay. So only people who are competition to the fish oil industry can't convert plant omega-3s into fish omega-3s. So that's where that comes from. And when you because I was at the front end of all of this, I got to see all the politics and who the players were, right? So there was a professor at a university in Oregon who said that if you ate enough B vitamins, you didn't need any essential fatty acids. And when he said that, there were already 6,000 studies that talked about the essentiality of the essential fatty acids. But there are people who follow this guy. He died a couple of years ago, but there are people who still follow this guy. And some of those people, and there are some very high profile people who have bought the Kool-Aid, who've drank the Kool-Aid of the oil dissers. And they say no omega-6s, no seed oils. And they fundamentally, you have to say, they have not done their homework. They're putting the blame in the wrong place. They're telling people not to use omega-6s, which are essential for every cell in your body and turn into hormone-like regulating substances in every cell in your body. And if you don't have any omega-6s in your body is history. And the same thing is true for omega-3. So it's like the devil's always in the details. And they haven't looked at the details. And they have misinformed, they are misinforming huge numbers of people right now. And there's some very high profile people. Among the people who've been misinformed in that arena is RFK. And I think RFK, I think he's genuine about trying to make a difference. But he's a lawyer, not a scientist. He's not a biochemist. So he has been informed by some people who haven't done their homework, and as a result of that, is ignoring an area in which changes need to be made for the health, for Maha, for making America healthy again.
It's an interesting thing
I'd
that,
love to talk. I'd love to talk to him.
yeah,
I could.
I'd love to see you guys be able to get together, and any of the questions that he has, you can kind of explain them and direct them into a, because I feel like it's almost an easy thing to just say. I mean, I've caught myself in the past doing that too, where I just like, almost avoid industrial seed oils because for the most part, what most people are going to get is likely rancid. But the
But it's
real
not rancid. It's not rancid. There's all kinds of different ways that oils are damaged.
so I should
I can give you about 10 or 12 different ways in which the molecules are changed from natural to unnatural. And they all, if they're unnatural, they take room in your body and they occupy a space and something is supposed to be going on in that space, and that requires a natural molecule. And if you have an unnatural molecule in that place, then what's supposed to be going on there can't go on, and that's how you begin to get the malfunctions, derailments of biochemical processes that ultimately result in disease.
Interesting. It makes me think of all the ways in which we've become
I
synthetic.
was thinking the same thing. It's like
Right.
we're becoming less natural and more
Plastic.
synthetic in a lot of
Yeah.
ways. But what I
Right.
was going to get at with that is I think what happens is it's like people take the top part of a conversation and they sort of go, well, okay, a lot of industrial seed oils are damaged, not good for you. So omega-6s in general, take them off, don't do them because they're damaged, they're not going to be good for you. But it takes away from the real conversation was like, actually, this is a part of nature. Nature didn't really screw it up. It's like, how did we screw it up? And if we can get back to nature, then we can actually get all the benefits from all of the stuff if it's done properly.
And we screwed it up by processing, by doing processing, not with health, but with shelf life in mind.
Exactly.
or not with quality of life or money, but money in mind or whatever it is. When the goal is off, then the track's going to be off, then the results are going to be off.
Yeah.
So I think we see
this in so many areas.
The goal defines your journey. So set a really good goal. Health is my goal, right? Health is my goal. Peace is my goal. I like the good stuff. You know, I took a year medicine because I thought it was healthcare. We call it healthcare, right? And I thought I'd learn about health because I wanted to help people get healthy. If you know what health is, if somebody comes to you sick, you turn them a direction of health, give them a push, watch them get better. But you have to know where to push them. So you have to know what health is. So we only learned about disease. And I thought, well, maybe we get the good stuff later. So I went and talked to the dean. I said, I came here to study health. What is health? And he looked at me with these super beautiful, compassionate brown eyes. And he said, we don't know. We're working on it. I couldn't believe that's got to be the deepest professional disappointment I have ever experienced.
Wow.
And then we were told in first year medicine, in the preclinical course, that a doctor should always sound as though he knows what's going on, even when he doesn't. And they call that PR. And on the farm where I grew up, we call it lying.
Yeah, or fake it too.
That ended my medical career. You know, now there are some people getting a lot of attention for jumping ship and going more natural from their medical training. I did that in 1964. It was like, no, I'm not going to lie. I'm going to lie to people for a living. And of course, they basically just do what they're told. And then if somebody's motive who tells them what to do is not a motive for quality of life or health, then they're going to do things that hurt health and hurt quality of life because they only know how to follow orders, because they haven't figured out what's actually true about health. And that's an institutional problem. I think every institution has a problem like that. You know, whatever their goal is, they start with, we're trying to fix something, and then they become more interested in maintaining their institution. And then pretty soon they're using their institution by somebody else who can maybe give them more money or something. That's what do they call that? Capture, right? Institutional capture, right? There's a lot of that going on. There's a lot of it going on. And we don't learn in school. We don't learn about human nature and health. Those are two things that we have to deal with every day. The question of existence and the question of how to be healthy. And we don't get any training in it. You know, we're just like we don't get training in relationships. You know, the hardest thing to do, no training, zero training. Mm-hmm. What? You know, who's in charge of this? You know, like, anyway.
I wanted to ask you, when you're working then with flaxseed oil, for example, then this kind of eliminates the concern over mercury levels that fish oils would be concerned around, correct?
You can get, well, it depends on where this flax is grown. But if it's organic, there shouldn't be any mercury in it for sure. But by the way, you know, just going back on the question you asked before, you know, when you eat seeds and nuts, those are the rich sources of the essential fatty acids of the omega-3 and omega-6. Those are associated with longevity. Now, why is that? Because the oils in them are not damaged, right? So if you can take the oils out without damaging them, then you'll get longevity from that. I, by the way, unlike the doctor, I use my own medicine. So I use my oil every day. It's like since 1994 is when we started the blend. I use it every day. I use lots of spices. I pay attention to what I eat, try to keep it in line with nature, more like fresh, whole, raw, organic, local, seasonal, mostly plant-based. And I have more energy now than most people when they're 84. Couple of weeks ago, we went and I used a chainsaw for 3 days, cutting down trees and firewood and logs and stuff. And, you know, I mean, my body was sore because I don't do that every day, right? But I have the energy for it and I have the focus for it as well. So,
Udo, you had mentioned around, so I've two questions that have come up that I'd like
to ask. Well, there was one more thing that I was going to say about your question that you already asked.
Go ahead first.
That is that, you know, people sometimes say, well, you know, you got lots of omega-6s, so just use flax oil. The problem with the omega-6s is they're damaged. You should not be using them. You should be getting off damaged omega-6s and get onto omega-6s made with health in mind. Flax oil won't get you enough of those. That's why we made the blend, so that we actually, you get both omega-3 and omega-6 made with health in mind, undamaged, and you're bringing in the missing omega-3s, but you're also getting omega-6, enough omega-6s not to become omega-6 deficient.
Yeah. So Udo, how long does that take? So say someone's been eating, you know, damaged oils for a long time, their ratios are really out of balance, they've probably created a lot of cell membrane damage. They make that change. They stop consuming damaged oils. They move to a more natural diet. They start to take in healthy, clean oils, like you're suggesting. What's the sort of turnaround time? How fast can that start to switch around for them?
It depends on who you ask, but the research I said is that the fats in your body turn over about every 16 months. But there's another way to look at it, is your body is always turning over. You don't notice it, but it's a major construction site 24/7 lifelong, right? And some estimates say that every year, 98% of the atoms in your body are removed and replaced. So that means if I talk to you guys a year from now, I'm talking to two completely different people. Mm-hmm. You still have the same ideas, you know, but the whole edifice is taken down and rebuilt without affecting the crazy ideas you have. I mean, isn't that interesting?
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio.
the station that makes you feel good.
So what that means is that no matter what you've done to your body, if you're sick, then what you need to do is you need to raise your standards. And then within 1 year, you will have rebuilt 98% of your body to a higher standard. If you look at water, water goes through your body even quicker than that, because if you drink the amount of water you're supposed to drink, which is 2 to 3 liters a day, between 10 and 15 times your body weight in water goes through your body every year. 10 to 15 times. And some of the other, the minerals and the vitamins, you know, they all go through your body, but at different rates. And in 7 years, 100% of the atoms in your body will have been removed and replaced. So fundamentally, it doesn't take that long, but it doesn't happen overnight. You know, what's interesting is if you've been eating badly for 10 years and you then set the right standard, then within 1 year, you will have rebuilt 98% of your body to that higher standard. If you've been eating badly for 50 years, well, then within 1 year, you will have rebuilt the body to a higher standard. So it doesn't matter how long you've been doing it wrong. What matters is that you start doing it right.
I think that's such a powerful thing for people to hear, because
it brings them hope.
Yeah, well, and by the way, that's why healing is even possible, because your body's always turning over. That's why you still have to eat after you're fully grown, right? If your body wasn't always turning over, you wouldn't have to eat, but then you couldn't heal either.
Well, we often talk about it as kind of like, are you more in like focusing more of a regeneration or more of a degeneration? Because depending on what your choice is, you can basically promote either one of those pathways more so. And a lot of people are really in more degeneration. But what I like about the idea where you start to look and go, essentially almost every year, you are structurally a new living being.
Yep.
So it's like, what's your blueprint? You know, what upgrade your blueprint so that you've got better quality materials, you've got a new design. And I think you can extrapolate that to even how we're thinking, how we're feeling, all the different things that sort of potentially impact that blueprint. But you can create a new blueprint, and your body is always regenerating if you are supporting that system.
Yeah. Yeah. The crazy thing is that when something goes wrong, you need to raise the standards. And frankly, that's not just about the body. That's about everything going on in the world. If your politics isn't working, raise your standards. If your medicine isn't working, raise your standards. If your education's not working, raise your standards. And then what is it? How do you raise the standards? It's always to go more closely aligned with nature and your nature. Because when you take your clothes off, you're just a little naked creature, natural creature, right? And all the laws that apply to nature apply to you, even if you're wearing a silk scarf. Or whatever, right? So we've kind of covered it over, and we make it seem like we're cultured and we're civilized and we're smarter than nature and we're really something, right? But actually, we're just natural being in a natural succession with an unbroken line of reproductive successes that goes 4 billion years back. Because if there had been one reproductive failure in all that time, you wouldn't be here. Of course, some people think it's only been 6,000 years, but whatever it is, you are the result of an unbroken success of reproductions. That's very long. Don't screw it up this time. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's always been about living in line with nature and your nature. Yeah. That's where the quality comes from. That's who life determined what that quality is. And that's what you don't need to be aiming for what your government tells you or your church tells you or your neighbors tell you or your teachers tell you. You need to be aiming for what's in line with nature. And some of that you got to figure out yourself, because our education on those topics is very poor.
Mm-hmm. We're going to dive more into that in just a moment here too. I think that'll segue into the second part of what we want to talk about, because it's really foundational. One of the other questions that you had, or one of the things that you had mentioned around, was with frying. A lot of people do fry with different oils. It still astounds me how many people still just get, you know, the cheapest canola oil they can find and use that as their oil to cook with. But what are your thoughts with?
Or even margarine.
Yeah. What are your thoughts around saturated fats being used to fry? Can you do that? Are there anything that you can do when people, if they want to fry, is there any way that they can incorporate that would be okay? Or is it basically all should be pushed to the side and move on to a new way of addressing and cooking your foods?
Of course, they always can. We can do whatever we want. But just because we can doesn't mean we should. So it goes like this. The omega-3 essential fatty acid is 5 times more sensitive to damage than the omega-6. Omega-6 is 2.5 times more sensitive to damage than omega-9. Omega-9 is 2.5 times more sensitive to damage than saturated. And what does that mean? When you heat a fat to, let's say, 400 degrees Fahrenheit or a couple hundred degrees Celsius, you will do more damage to the omega-3s than the omega-6s, more to the 6s than the 9s, more to the 9s than the saturated fats. So what you can say is, if you're going to be stupid enough to fry, then you do the least damage with the hardest fats. But that's not, you know, that's least worst. That's not best. That's least worst, okay? Because when you fry in lard or butter or tallow, anyway, when you fry in a hard fat, you're still burning the food and you're still taking natural molecules and turning them into charcoal or into unnatural molecules, many of which are carcinogenic, like the smoke that comes off your fried foods. That smoke gives cooks who spend their 8 hours a day in front of a frying pan 4 times more lung cancer than normal people who only spend 2 hours a day in front of the frying pan. 4 times more, because they're breathing in those fumes, and the fume hoods are not perfect, right? So you're turning stuff into smoke, which is carcinogenic, but the black burnt stuff is carcinogenic too. That's not even news, right? And we're asking about, well, if I'm going to fry, what can I get away with? That's really, it's the question, right? And the truth is, you don't get away with anything. You know, in nature standard for eating, for all the creatures that eat, fresh, whole, raw, organic, local, mostly seasonal, and for human beings, mostly plant-based or largely plant-based. That's the standard, right? If when you're sick, that's the standard you need to take steps towards. Mm-hmm. And every step we've taken away from that, that has cost us something in health. And every step we take back in that direction, we get something back in health. That's just how it works. It's not like I didn't make that up. That's how nature made it up. Right? And nature is the benevolent dictator on the planet. Right? Like life is the benevolent dictator in your body. Mm-hmm. Right? So, is what you need to do, what you do needs to be in line with life's requirements. And what is that? You know, what is that? Life loves your body unconditionally, 24/7, never takes time off, never goes on strike, just gives and gives and gives and gives. Lifelong, unconditional love for your body. You know, you look love from the outside, you've got a ton of love on the inside. And maybe if you're in touch with the love on the inside, you could maybe bring that to expression a little better than when you're not in touch with it. Right?
Mm-hmm. Udo, could you give people a sort of practical run through if you were looking at from a daily sort of way, pick like three meals a day, two meals a day, what would you put in there to make sure that you are getting your optimal requirements just from everything you've done over the past?
You mean of all your nutrients?
Like, what would you do on a daily basis? You know, like what does Udo do on a daily basis with all of the information you've acquired to make sure that you're getting the right amounts of your, you know, omega-3s, your omega-6s, your saturated fats, and in what sort of way are you consuming them? Just so people have another perspective of what that looks like tangibly.
Okay. I haven't always eaten the way I eat now. And I think as during your lifetime, it's likely that your needs change enough, even if you're doing it right, it will still change from when you're younger to when you get older. So I grew up mostly on plants because we lived out without electricity and we didn't have a refrigerator. So we had meat once a week. My father would have to drive into town. He had a locker there at the butcher's and there was a quarter of beef in the locker and the butcher cut it up. And he would go once a week, he would go there, get a piece, bring it home. We'd eat it that evening. That would usually be a Friday. So that was the meat pretty much once a week. We had dairy. We had unpasteurized milk from farmers close to where we lived. We soured that. We let it go sour, turned it into yogurt. We churned our own butter out of that milk, because if you just let the milk sit, the cream goes on top. You scoop off the cream, you put it in a churn, and then, you know, this water separates from the oil and you get butter, right? So we ate like that. We had oatmeal every morning with milk. My father made it. He got up before anybody did, so he always made breakfast for everybody. He didn't like boiling the oats, so he brought the milk to a boil, then he threw in the oats, and then he just let it sit. So he didn't boil them so that the oats weren't slimy. He himself did not like slimy oats. And it became a family value because I don't like slimy oats now either. Okay. So, and we had a huge garden because we had, we cleared 40 acres by hand and by horse. We had a huge, huge garden next to the house. And every kid had their own patch where they got to grow whatever they wanted to grow. And I think that's really good education for kids, to learn how to make food, to learn what it takes to build the patience of the seasons and waiting for, you know, you can't just, you know, you can't pull out the carrot when it's 2 weeks old and, you know, think it should be, you know, that only happens in the city, right? So, and then I went to university and I had all the same garbage everybody else ate. I drank coffee because everybody drank coffee. We didn't drink much coffee. We didn't do much desserts either. So we were pretty plain, and my mother was not a gourmet cook. She was a, you know, boiled potatoes, fried potatoes, you know, so, and I used to drink coffee because everybody else did. And I could trace the coffee going all the way down my digestive tract because it was irritating, but I drank it anyway. And that didn't change until I started taking probiotics, because probiotics protect the lining of your digestive tract. I didn't know that, though, you know, but when I found out, that's what I found out, right? and then I got into oils. That's the most complicated area. More problems come from damaged oils than any other part of nutrition, just because of their sensitivity to damage and the toxicity that comes from that damage. Protein was never a problem, because if you eat only whole foods, you'll always have enough protein unless you're a bodybuilder on steroids.
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So protein fiber comes from plants, so you don't need to take fiber if you're eating plants. And they're good for bowel regularity and blood sugar regulation, and they're good food for the probiotics. So, and you name it, I'll eat it. If it's green, I'll eat it, unless it's poison. I don't eat poison ivy, but poison ivy still makes oxygen for me. So I don't put it down either. So what I do now is the older I get, the more I like raw food. And raw food, why? Because there's energy in raw food that when you cook it, you destroy that, you that energy goes away. That's why cooked greens are limp and not crunchy, right? So there's something in raw food. I think that energy, that life energy that's in the raw food, if you put that in the middle of your body, in your digestive tract, it can't get out other than going through your tissues. So I think the energy in raw foods actually helps health in some ways. And I have nothing on paper to prove it. But when I eat it, it feels better. So I eat mostly raw, mostly organic, mostly plant-based. And it's all based on vegetables, seeds and nuts, fruit. I probably eat more fruit than I need to. And what else? Oh, and herbs and spices. One of the things I do that's kind of like a recipe, I get tahini. You know what tahini is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so it's sesame, crunched up sesame. It's like peanut butter, but it's made out of sesame seed. So I get that organic in glass jars, like 500 grams, like a pound, right? And I let it sit, and then the oil goes on top because oil is lighter than protein. So the oil sits on top. I dump it because it's all an omega-6 oil with no omega-3s in it. I put in my oil because it's omega-3 and omega-6 made with health in mind in the right ratio. So I put that in, and then I put in a ton of spices. So I go... hawthorn, good for heart, cayenne, ginger, cumin, cinnamon, cloves, black seed, curry, which is turmeric with other spices, amla, and then there is a three herb combination from India called triphala and neem. Those are bitter. Those are quite bitter. And I put in other stuff too. But I put all of that in. I mix it all in. And then it's kind of like a dressing. And I dip my veggies in. I love broccoli. I literally dip the broccoli in it, and it's spicy and it's a little bit bitter, and it's, you know, it has a sharp because of, and that's what I eat. That's how I eat. Sometimes I'll eat bananas in the morning. Sometimes I eat apples, some oranges, some grapefruit. But the main ones, seeds and nuts. I don't do grains. I don't do bread. I don't do pasta. I don't have them in the house. I don't not eat them. You know, occasionally, if I go out somewhere, I'll eat it. My son is a hunter, so he gets moose or something. If he invites me, I'll eat a little bit of moose, but that happens maybe twice a year, three times a year. So I'm not a fanatic, but I'm paying attention to what my body's telling me. And what it's telling me is that the best thing to do, I drink matcha made with almond milk. I don't use the milk in cartons. Part of it is that the cartons are made out of stuff that doesn't belong in your body. And that ends up in the milk. Although that's a problem with all our packaging, right? And occasionally, maybe twice a week, I'll have a coffee. So just because I like the taste, you know. And I probably drink less water than most people think I should. And I think part of the reason is because I get enough oil to make that barrier in the skin, so I don't sweat as much, I don't lose as much water through my skin as most people do. So what have I missed? Oh, I eat dates, figs sometimes. Love tomatoes. I love tomatoes and broccoli. I eat cabbage and I eat mustard greens and, you know, kale. And, you know, it's like all the stuff, but fresh, organic, raw.
Fresh.
And some people say, oh, raw is hard. And, you know, when you get older, it's harder. It's become easier for me. But I'm not going into it with my mind already made up. I'm going in like a scientist saying, I wonder what'll happen if. Mm-hmm. And then I try it out, and then I pay attention to what my body tells me.
It's really, I think, to me, what's been going on more this last while is so much undoing of just what we've heard from other authorities.
Yeah.
All the time. I know a big message for us is try things out and really clean the slate so you can actually start to get some good feedback on your own body, and then start to make your own decisions. Like, you know, listen to other people if it resonates and then try it out.
Yeah.
Don't keep it, you know, that's rote. It's like, try it out and see what happens. And and just have an honest relationship with it, with yourself, and make the changes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of my biggest things is, honestly, is I've been spending, it's like, this is 54 years now, that before I get out of bed in the morning, I spend an hour in stillness. So I'm not in my head, I'm not tripping on who did what to me, and I'm not dealing with my traumas, and I'm not, you know, I'm not, the mind is supposed to be a calculator. It's not supposed to be your main entertainment. And most people's minds is their main entertainment, you know, and it's good entertainment and bad entertainment, tragedy and comedy, always something going on. I love being able to step out of that and get into a place that's really completely quiet. And from that quiet place is where my observations are clean and my insights are clean. And I come up with stuff all the time, insights into the world I live in, the world I grew up in, how systems work, what's not working, what we need, what are the answers, what's the good stuff? You know, because we're addicted to dealing with problems rather than creating solutions. And mostly we move the problems around rather than actually solving them. And why is that? It's because if you never solve the problem, you're going to make money on somebody every day because you never fix the problem. We've done that in medicine. We've done that in law. We've done that in government. You know, there's always a problem. If there isn't a problem, then it gets created. Because because it attracts your survival instincts. But the smart people that lived on this planet in different cultures always said, listen, your body's a terminal condition. One day it's gonna check out. You're gonna die one day. Why don't you fly while you're here instead of crawling? Why don't you thrive in the time you have rather than always worrying about protecting yourself and, you know, putting off the inevitable, you know, because you're not going to put off on the inevitable. The body is a terminal condition, no matter how healthy you are, right? Including health, right? But there's something in you that never dies because it has no form to begin with. One is the universal essence called peace or God. One is the individual essence called life or life energy or solar energy or master of the body, or the name of any of the masters who talked about that kind of stuff, right? Those don't die because they're formless to begin with. And they run the show, right? Without peace, there's no love, and without love, there's no life, right? But you know, where do you go in science? You don't talk about that. I studied biology. It's a study of life. We never studied life in biology. We didn't study health in healthcare. We didn't study life in biology, and we didn't study soul in psychology. But it took me a while to figure that out. We studied form and function in biology. And when I went into biology, I thought, I want to know what life is. And I didn't want it because I wanted a job. I wanted to appreciate life more. I'm a kid looking around, it's like nature, life, holy smokes, this is amazing. I want to know everything about it. And so biology, the study of life, I knew the word, I knew the meaning of the word. I said to my lab partner, you know, we should study ourselves because we have form, function, and life together. And we don't have to kill ourselves to get to know ourselves, right? So we studied form and function. We never studied life. I thought we'd get a beaker of life, liquid and shining, and one day we'd look at, wow, there's life. Never got the beaker, you know? And then I actually got my lesson on life on a spiritual experience I had after some Christians treated me very badly, cursed me, excluded me. And I was just a kid trying to figure it out, right? And I had a meeting with the being made of light. I didn't have a meeting. The being came and visited me. I didn't set the meeting or anything. I didn't even know there was such a thing, right? And the being embodied a message that said, I am come not to judge, but to love. And then I started thinking about that. Wow, there's the essence of the message of the masters to humanity. But then I realized, oh, that's also the message of life to your body. Oh, and life is the master of your body. Oh, and what those masters on the outside were talking about is the master on the inside, because they were in touch with it, because they did some kind of a self-knowledge practice. And so if you say, okay, well, you know what? Life is Buddha. Yep, that makes sense. Life is Krishna. Yep, that makes sense. Life is Christ. Oh, that makes sense too. And of course he said, kingdom is in there. He's in the kingdom, right? Eh? So you want to seek the kingdom? You want to discover what's in there? It's astounding and unbelievably beautiful and awesome what a human being is in their essential nature, not in their mind, but in their essential nature. And then you start looking at, you know, actually everything is sacred. Everything that goes on in your body is sacred, even taking a dump, even the process from which the food turns into a dump, right? I mean, who came up with that, right? And then, so then you're a miracle inside of this huge miracle called the universe. And What about living your life in appreciation? In presence to, and then appreciation for the miracle that you are. And I think if 8 billion people did that, there wouldn't be a war in the Ukraine, and there wouldn't be all that craziness in Iran, and there wouldn't be all that craziness in Washington, D.C. and Ottawa, because there's so much craziness everywhere because we're not actually present in our own life. And then we're in a head trip, some ideology, some narrative. And where do those come from? Well, somebody made that shit up. And they made it up as a substitute for doing the homework of being present in their own existence.
Well, this is, you talked about spending time in stillness. This is something that's a big part of our lives too. We often begin the day with stillness and finish the day with stillness. And it's a part of our practice, even with our kids, as they would do more of a nature school kind of environment that we had created. And part of that's a sit spot. They get used right away for 10 minutes just being in stillness and quiet. So
yeah. Well, the thing is if you model that for your kids, you make it easy for them to learn it because they learn everything from you. If you're not doing that, you're depriving your kids of something that's actually really important for their life.
Yeah. And I think that's really key because oftentimes parents will say, well, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to get them to do this or be interested in that or read a book? It's like, okay, how often do you sit in quiet? How often do you pick up a book to read?
Exactly. Exactly. And kids don't say as you say, they don't do as you say, they do as you do.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And why aren't we modeling that? And why aren't we modeling that for our relationship? Because, my relationship was six years of hell, right? I hadn't done my homework. She hadn't done her homework. Well, if I haven't done the homework to get to connected to the love that's within me, and she hasn't done the homework to get connected to the love in her, where's the love in the relationship supposed to come from? Because I didn't know how to get there. She didn't know how to get there. So we argued for 6 years, and then she had an affair, and that was it. Right? And when you think about it, we have been as human beings for as long as we've been here. We've prided ourselves in our doing and have been really stupid about being. For smart creatures that have been given amazing gifts, we're really screwing it up. And we don't have to.
And possibly too, as more and more craziness just keeps stirring up in people's lives and in the world around us, like I find a lot more people are actually being pushed to have to kind of connect to that. More people are actually getting more interested in, I need to find some stillness because like everything is so crazy. Sense. That's the only place that I can start to come back to myself.
Yeah. So because being more and more, the worse it gets, the more people either fold or start looking for something that actually works.
Yeah.
I was in my mid 20s. I saw things get worse in the world. And I was looking around and because I came out of a farm, so I was like kind of naive. I didn't cities and all the institutions, all that. And I started looking and said, I don't see any place in this society where there is a renewing principle. So it's all getting old, but it's not getting new. Where's the renewing principle? Of course, the joke was on me. I took an LSD trip. I was in science. Nobody in science did LSD. I asked somebody in the arts faculty, what is LSD like? Because I'm a search for truth kind of guy, right? So I asked this guy, so what's it like? What's LSD like? And he looked at me. And he said so sweetly, he said, if you haven't done it, I can't explain it to you. And if you have done it, I don't need to explain it to you. And I said, what a crazy answer. But then I did one, Sandoz LSD, the good stuff from Switzerland, and realized in that experience, and I was laughing, I was rolling on the floor, laughing, tears running down my cheeks, listening to Mozart, laughing in, with two guys watching me. And it struck me as the funniest thing I had ever come across, that everything that I was so studiously looking for in the world was all already within me. And that sort of melted the war baby personality off me. And I said, oh my God, I've got 1,000 options. And then it took me like 20 years to figure out how I wanted to live, because I got started pretty late, right? But my point was, is that I was looking for the renewing principle. Well, the renewing principle, what I call the renewing principle, is inside of every human being. Your own renewal is inside of you, but you have to go to it. It doesn't chase you, right? And so that's why the stillness practice. Be with yourself. You know, if you want to make observations, you want to learn about who you are, what you're good for, how would you get to know yourself if you never spent time with yourself? Right? It's like, you know, it's like I want to get to know her, but I only talk to this person over here. How am I going to get to know her if I don't spend time with her? Right? Well, the same thing is true for us ourselves. How would I get to know me if I don't spend time with me? And then the time has to be quiet and calm, in a good place, because only from calmness do you not distort your observations by mental input or emotional input, right? So 8 billion people, if 8 billion people spent, you know, started their day with stillness and ended their day in stillness, everything would work.
Yeah. Stillness is kind of like LSD. You can't really explain it unless people actually have the experience and themselves, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, all you can say is, honestly, the smartest thing you'll ever do in your life is nothing. And stillness, you know, being is the hardest work you'll ever do.
This comes to the end of our time for this episode. Please go to inspirehealthpodcast.com and listen to the remainder of this important episode. Thank you so much.